Welcome to the Bill Cartwright Show with our special guest, USF alum, Matt Quinlan. Matt, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Bill. Appreciate you inviting me on.
This is what I like to do really quickly, besides have some fun, is to kind of get to know you really quickly. So let's talk about where you grew up. I was reading it online. And let's talk about mom, dad, or your siblings real quick.
Okay, yeah, my family's all from the Chicago area. So that's where my entire family is kind of originated from. I lived there for 7 or 8 years when I was a kid. You know, was a Bulls fan back in the day. I'm 45, so this would have been like the 80s, your heyday.
Yeah.
So was a Bulls fan as a kid, and then and ended up moving out of Chicago and moved to Mississippi for my dad. You know, was really entrepreneurial and had some career opportunities. And so we moved. And so I grew up in Mississippi until I was in high school. So I started high school and then I moved to California and I've been here ever since. Went to high school in Fresno, went to undergrad at Cal Poly San Luis Obispo. I graduated in the year 2000 and then went to USF Law School and graduated from there in 2004. I have one brother. Twin brother, we're fraternal twin brothers, so you wouldn't know it if you came across us both at the same time. We don't look alike, but it's just the two of us, and we had a great upbringing, and you know, our parents were really good to us. And my dad passed 5 or 6 years ago, but my mom recently moved to Marin, where I live now, and so she's around, and I've got three little kids and a wife, and so having grandma around and my mom around has been great for kind of this chapter of my life, and you know, helping with my family. So no complaints.
Let's talk a little bit about you in college. What kind of kid were you then? And what were you thinking? And why did you make your college selection?
Well, I mean, I wanted to go to Cal Poly because it has a really great academic reputation. That was kind of the main reason. And, you know, close second, of course, was the town of San Luis Obispo, which is a pretty kind of amazing, unique place, especially back in the late 90s, before it became a little more commercial. But, you know, the town, the college town experience, the academic reputation, you know, it was an easy choice. My brother also went there, so we went there together. And so, you know, my college years are some of the most, you know, some of the best memories I have and some of the, you know, the fondest memories that I have. Still have, you know, many lifelong friends from there, and we stick in touch. And so, you know, my college experience was great. I was a business major. I am entrepreneurial. I own my own business now, which is a law firm here in San Francisco in the Marina. I do personal injury law and fire litigation. I also started the Hilltop Club, which we're going to talk about here today as well. So, like, it comes natural to me to be entrepreneurial, you know, I've started several businesses over the years and stuff. So I kind of just, like, enjoy that process. And so I learned a lot of that in college, of course, being a business major. And then I went to law school, you know, primarily because I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do coming out of college. I was 22 years old or something and, you know, thought I could invest further in my education. That seemed like a good idea. And so ultimately it was. Came to USF, came to San Francisco in the year like 2000 or 2001 and really never left the Bay Area ever since. So people will ask me, including you today, you know, where are you from? Tell me about your upbringing. And I consider San Francisco to be my home or the Bay Area to be my home because I've lived here for more than half of my life. And, you know, I don't have a strong roots anywhere else now. My extended family lives in Chicago, but my mother now lives here. And so this is my home now. And that's kind of how I view it.
Well, it is interesting. Now, for one thing, have you always been this academically focused? And where does that come from? Is that from your parents? Does that come from somebody mentoring you? Because everybody has their own path, but it is interesting how you get focused. That focus, that's really amazing to be entrepreneurial while your dad, but just that focus academically.
Yeah, you know, it just, I think it's something that my parents instilled in me. You know, it wasn't really a conscious decision of mine. It was just something that they instilled in me. I mean, they expected us to get really good grades and they expected us to take school seriously. And they expected us to go to college and encouraged us to, speaking to me and my brother, to get a graduate degree if that's something we wanted to do. So they just made it really easy and kind of always kind of directed us in a way that made us feel like that was important. So I just was kind of riding the wave, you know. I don't think I ever at any point decided to like invest or overinvest in my education. It was just kind of, you know, the way I was envisioned, you know, my late teens and 20s. And so I just kind of executed that and had a good time along the way. But obviously, you know, investing in my education has, I think, served me well, kind of gotten me to the point now where I have a lot of options in my life and a lot of experiences that I can draw on, you know, including getting involved with the Hilltop Club here at USF. So, you know, no complaints about it.
Well, I am curious. So then you graduate from college and then now you're a business major. So how do you get to law school? Is that what you do?
Yes, I mean,
how does that happen? Does somebody influence you that way?
You know, not really. I don't come from a family of lawyers. I really didn't even know kind of what kind of law I wanted to practice. You know, probably expectedly, I ended up being in the business of law now that I have my own business. I consider myself a lawyer, but I consider myself a businessman, and I'm just in the business of practicing law. So I have people that work for me, and I have an office, and I have, you know, a responsibility to make payroll and, you know, drive new business to my firm and advertise and that kind of thing. So it feels very business-like to me. But law school, I think, was just a way at that time. I didn't really know I wanted to do that, but I did. I was interested in kind of the intellectual side of, you know, learning about the law and kind of refining myself in that way. And it also bought me, you know, a few years in my early 20s to kind of figure out how I wanted to invest my time and where I wanted to go. I don't love the idea of being 18 or 22 years old and having to decide, you know, what your life's path is going to be, because I didn't really know at that point. And so this felt like a no downside law school. I mean, a no downside option for me. They bought me some more time to try to figure it out. And so my 22, 3, 4, 5, 6 year old self, you know, grew up a lot during that time and made it easier for me by the time I was done with law school to kind of make better decisions. So that's kind of what I was thinking, you know, when I went to law school, and it worked out like that too.
So you went to USF. Why USF? What drew you there?
Well, I mean, I love the city, obviously. USF Law School gave me a scholarship as well, which was enticing, you know, to have them want me to come there like that. You know, I had some other options, but I love the idea of being in the city. I love the idea of building a career in the city. And, you know, USF at the time had just built that beautiful new library. They were investing a lot into the school, had a good reputation. And so it was a pretty easy decision for me.
Did you, were you able to connect with any, like the president of the law school or any of the professors there were in school?
Yeah. I did. I mean, I think there was probably maybe 200 people in my class. Like there was, I mean, it wasn't 200 individuals sitting in a classroom, but that's how many people were my year of law school. And so that's pretty small, you know, and there's, I don't know, maybe 20 or 30 professors for 200, you know, young people. So, you know, you got an opportunity to build relationships with them, and they would, you know, invest in you in ways that you might not have gotten in college. They seemed to, you know, want to kind of be involved with your evolution and help maybe place you and for some opportunities for a career. And they helped me do that. And some of the relationships and networking I did through law school kind of gave me some early opportunities in my career when I was in summer, you know, between years of law school and when I graduated from law school. So, I mean, I was pleased and very satisfied about the way that, you know, the community that I rallied around, you know, the students helped us kind of open their network to us. And so, yeah, I mean, I think the administration at USF Law was amazing.
Okay, so talk about your first job out of school. And I do agree with you. It is really hard to know what direction. I was lucky, basketball, boom, drafted, I'm out. But so what were you thinking? So I graduated from law school, which is pretty amazing. So now what are you thinking, your first job?
When I was between college and law school, I knew I was going to law school and I knew I was coming to USF, but I had like 6 months or something before it started. And so I got in like an internship down in Silicon Valley at some of these big like IP firms. And it was, they were doing IPOs and I mean, it was an intense environment. People working like crazy, young lawyers, you know, just basically sleeping in their office and stuff. And so I saw that. I worked a lot too as kind of a paralegal. And I was like, I don't want to be a lawyer like this. You know, this does not seem appealing to me. And so I was very fortunate to have had the opportunity to see what it looks like to be, you know, fresh out of law school at a place like that. And so I knew I didn't want to do that. So I had that advantage. So when I went to school, I was, and they kind of want to push you into some of those bigger firms because those are high profile jobs. And that's kind of like for the school's reputation, they like the idea of like placing, you know, students in big law firms and just for the reputational stuff. And so they kind of want to steer you that way, but I didn't want to go that way. And I already knew that because of that experience. And so I ended up looking for other opportunities in the summertime that weren't at these big, you know, kind of grind you out law firms. And so I linked up with a friend one of my friend's uncles was a lawyer, and his wife worked at a law firm downtown, and they did personal injury law primarily. And I didn't know anything about that, and it wasn't something that I was seeking out to do, but it was a small firm, and it was kind of had an intimate setting, and I liked that. And so I worked there for one summer and I was like, this is more like what I want to do, right? Like you have personal relationships, you work a reasonable amount of hours, you have clients that you know that know you, as opposed to this big bottom line you're working for or whatever. And so I liked that, making a difference in people's lives. And so that's kind of what started me on that process. And then I went back my second year. And then after I graduated from law school, I got hired at that law firm. There was maybe like four or five of us lawyers and maybe another 10 or so support staff. And so it was kind of a small firm, and worked there for 7 years or so. I was ultimately a partner there and had a really good experience and liked it a lot. And, you know, when I was kind of got myself to the point where, you know, it wasn't really my firm and I felt capable that I could do it myself. And so in 2010 or 11, I struck out on my own and opened my own firm. And I had just one person working for me at the time. I had a paralegal. And so we just kind of started from the bottom again with like no business and just kind of took a chance and invested in myself and made it. You know, a lot of people try that and fail, but I made it. And, you know, that was 13 years ago or whatever now. So, you know, that's kind of always been the path that I'm on. But as I mentioned before, I love the business side of it. And I love being responsible for this business, for growing this business, taking care of the people that work for me, being good and fair to people, doing a good job for my clients and making a difference in the community and to people. So I'm just very satisfied and have found it to be just personally very fulfilling to get to like be a businessman and help people and make a difference. So, you know, that I've had the same kind of career since law school. I've always been in this field, where I work on a contingency fee. I don't bill anybody by the hour. You know, I only get paid if I do a good job and I like that part of it. You know, I like to take chances. I like to invest in myself. And so, you know, that's exciting to me. And so if I do well, and have success, well, then I know that I earned it. You know what I mean? And if I don't, then I got to pay the price for that and I got to be better, you know? So there's no sure things, in my business, and I like it that way. So, you know, it's been good for me.
Awesome. Awesome. Now let's talk about USF, the Hilltop Club. How did you get involved with USF? Wanting to come back to USF and to get involved with their basketball program there.
Yeah. So, you know, when I was in law school, I went to a few games. We weren't very good back in the early 2000s. And, went to a few games and I didn't think a whole lot of it. I wasn't a rabid fan or anything. And then in 2000 and like maybe 16 or 17, I lived in the Inner Richmond at the time. And so I'd go up to a couple games just for fun and grab a couple buddies and come up to the game and started really enjoying it and having a good time. And I would go to some of like the more high profile games for a few years and started to fall in love with USF basketball. Maybe in 2019, I got season tickets, which was a big step and a commitment to the team. And so I was more intimately involved. And then I was talking with the school about contributing financially to the program. I was talking with Todd Golden and some of the athletic directors. And so this was the time when the Supreme Court case came out that allowed student athletes to make money on their name, image, and likeness. And so this was a new, very new cutting edge way to support a program. And so I talked to Todd Golden about it and he wanted to discuss it with me because he knew that we probably were going to need to get something going. And he wanted younger people involved that would kind of, be the engine of this thing. And so that was kind of the agreement. That was also the year that we made the NCAA tournament. So it was easy to kind of fall deeper in love with the program. And I did. And the plan was that Todd and I were going to meet after the season was over and we were going to discuss how me personally could contribute, or maybe because I have a business, maybe, support some of these guys with some money for NIL. And then Todd got hired to Florida and he was gone. Right. So I still wanted to do that. I was very interested in that. I was just getting my mind wrapped around this idea that these guys and gals could now make money for their name, image, and likeness. And I realized what an amazing opportunity it would be for USF to kind of warp speed ahead and not have to necessarily just try to get lucky with a recruit and grind it out and, build the program over 20 years to get us back to where we were when you played and the era before you as well. And so I viewed it as an amazing opportunity to get a jump on this and give ourselves a huge competitive advantage in recruiting and retaining. And so I called up. I knew Chris Grillson a little bit at the time just because Todd invited me to a couple practices and I would just kind of come around a little bit. And I did know Grillson. And so I didn't have his number though. And so when Todd left, I, sent a text out to a mutual friend of ours and said, give me Chris's number. We got to talk. Right. And so I called up Chris and said, hey, we got to talk about NIL. I was planning on talking to Golden about it, but you're the head man now. And so we need to talk. And he's like, fine, let's go. So we went and had lunch like the next day. And at the time I was just speaking on behalf of myself. I was like, here's how I can help. Here's how I can be involved in this. And it might help you with recruiting or letting them know that there's some support here for that. And I just very quickly realized like just me wasn't enough to make a difference. You know what I mean? Just one person in the community supporting NIL opportunities was not enough. And it would matter. It would matter, but it wouldn't matter in the way that I wanted it to matter. My intention as I sit here talking to you is I want to bring this program back to national prominence. That is my absolute intention. And I think NIL is going to be the key way for us to do it with a lot of other things falling in place as well. But to put it another way, without NIL, I think we have almost no chance of returning to national prominence. With NIL, I think we have a realistic chance of it. And so I realized, though, that one man's budget is not going to be enough to support a program and to help boost it to where we needed to go. So over the, now we're back in like 2022 and Khalil Shabazz is getting in the transfer portal because people are talking NIL with him. And I knew Khalil. So I talked to Khalil. I was like, don't leave, we'll support you here. And so he was kind of the first guy that, that we were able to wrangle out of that transfer portal. Me and my partner in the Hilltop Club, Phil Spiegel, we wrangled him out of the transfer portal because we needed him. And I'm like, we lose Khalil, we're going to lose all of our momentum. That was coming off the year we made the tournament. And so Khalil came back, and the Hilltop Club was forming at that time. So we had a contract with Khalil for NIL opportunities. And we're out on the recruiting trail in the transfer portal. So now the Hilltop Club exists and we're getting members. We're trying to raise awareness. People are still a little resistant. The school is a little kind of slightly hostile to us because they think that, you know, we're dipping into their donor pool, you know, and for money that comes into the Hilltop Club, it's money that doesn't go to the, you know, athletic department. So early on, they don't feel that way anymore. They're very supportive of the Hilltop Club. But at the time, because it was so new, it was a threat. And so we were just navigating a lot of rough waters. I mean, with the kind of headwinds of the school, with the headwinds of the donors, with the kind of, you know, ingrained attitude that student athletes should not make money, they're amateurs. And so it was difficult to get people to give a meaningful amount of money to something that they didn't know anything about, that they were thought was illegal, that the school was kind of a little bit resistant to. But you know, we kept our head down and we raised money and a couple dozen loyal Dons that have season tickets and love the program rallied around us, and we pooled our money into this collective that is the Hilltop Club. And we were able to provide opportunities to all, mainly for the men's basketball team. We do a little bit with the women as well, and that's kind of growing at this point. But that's how it started and where it formed. And the marketplace for NIL is, I mean, it's growing at just, you know, just a lightning pace. I'm friends with the coaches, and obviously we discuss, you know, these matters together. And I know that when the coaches get out on the recruiting trail, the first or second question these guys ask is, what's the story with NIL? What are the NIL opportunities like at USF? And if the answer is, well, we don't really have it, they're gone, right? And if you do have it, well, then all of a sudden, you know, you're in play, you know what I mean? And you have an opportunity to kind of like be appealing to players who, have such a market that lots of schools want them and lots of communities want them. And so our community, the Hilltop Club, is basically the USF community. And if we want our basketball program to excel and return to the days of greatness and go to March Madness on the regular, as opposed to every 25 years and stuff like that, well, our community has to rally around the Hilltop Club, pool its funds, and attract these student athletes, because if we don't, others will. And so it's a competition now amongst communities. It's a competition amongst alumni bases. And you know, if you have a lot of NIL resources available, well, then you're going to be able to recruit, because in my opinion, I've had a lot of time to kind of ruminate on this, but in my opinion, these kids deserve this money. It's been a long time that, you know, businesses and the school and everybody's been taking advantage of all the media attention and all the excitement that these guys and gals add to the whole college experience. And so, of course, in my opinion, they deserve it. And so it's like, you know, you need to be able to, you know, rally around and compensate them for the excitement that they bring. NIL is a way that we can do it. And, you know, you can already see it in our roster, right? You can already see the talent level in our roster is greatly improved. And that is a direct result of the existence of the Hilltop Club. We can get guys over Power Five schools. We can recruit with the big names in college basketball with good facilities, which we have, good coaching, which we have. I think our play philosophy, the way we play fast and, you know, kind of pro style ball, is attractive to these guys. And then obviously, if we can be competitive on a national landscape in NIL, we can get them. And we can improve our roster. And obviously, with an improved roster, we can have improved results. So, you know, we're in year two right now. You know, our budget this year is $1 million, the Hilltop Club. And so, you know, that's what we fundraise for. So this is not some small operation. It's a big operation. And it requires, you know, community members and alumni of means to support us financially. If they choose not to, and if we fail, either because we don't do a good job or the Hilltop Club, or because the community just doesn't buy into it, then the program will effectively die, at least in terms of being competitive. So those are the stakes. And much like some of the other stuff we talked about in my lab, I like high stakes. I like it. This motivates me. I'm a volunteer. I give my money to the Hilltop Club. I pull my money into the collective. And I volunteer all my time. So does my partner, Phil Spiegel. So we make no money on this. My intention is to not make any money. I don't have any incentive whatsoever of doing this except for my love of USF basketball and the challenge of returning us to national prominence. And so people that share that excitement and want that as well and have the ability to support us in small ways or large ways, they rally around the Hilltop Club, and here we are, and we're picking up a lot of steam. So it's going great so far in year two.
So is this all individual contributions, or yeah, we get different businesses involved, especially in the Bay Area where people are so entrepreneurial?
It's individuals and businesses. We have a 501c3 charity that we got set up so that when individuals give to the Hilltop Club, they give to the Hilltop Club Foundation. We have a lot of charitable partners in San Francisco, like the Guardsmen. Jerome Gums has a charitable organization called Empower Me Academy. He's a partner of ours. Salesian Boys and Girls Club. We have a few others. And so we work with them, and we engage our student athletes with their causes. We compensate, the guys on the team to go down and get involved in the charity, to raise awareness for the charity, to help them raise money. And so when individuals want to donate to the Hilltop Club, they can do that with a tax write-off, which is important to people. And then when businesses want to get involved, they can donate to our LLC arm, and then they get a tax write-off because it's a marketing and advertising expense. So the way we've got it currently set up, every dollar that comes into the Hilltop Club should be write-offable. Someone should be able to write that off, either because it's a business expense or because it's a charitable gift.
Awesome.
And we do have business partners, to answer your question more directly. We have business partners. For example, we just signed a partnership with Couture, which is a fine European clothing manufacturer. And, all the guys went in and they all got fitted for custom suits, fine, nice, expensive Italian suits. And they all wore them to the tip-off gala, which the Hilltop Club threw this year down at Once Ansem. And so the guys were looking sharp. Our business partner, Couture, loved it because they're Instagramming about them and, showing them a lot of attention and exposing them to the USF community. So we definitely want to build a network where the businesses and our business owners feel like they can tap into the USF community and we all support each other. That's just one example. But my law firm is also a business partner of the Hilltop Club. So, that's a big part of it as well, is building the community and kind of, tightening it up. My feeling and experience over the years has been that USF itself is not, and the community has not really been a business advantage for me now that I've been out in the community. It should be, right? And it should be. And so, now I'm able to kind of get exposure to the alumni, let people know what kind of business I have that works, that live in the community. And the idea would be, that we'll support each other and it'll drive more business. So, the business angle and the business partnerships we have are an important part of what we're building.
Awesome. Matt, talk about your family.
Yeah, so I got three little kids. I have two daughters and a son. My son's in the middle. They're 3, 5, and 7 years old. So I have a loud, raucous house with rascals everywhere. My wife, Kayla, and I love these kids though. And I work from home probably 3 or 4 days a week. So I'm around a lot. My wife, does not work outside the home. So she's able to be around the kids a lot. And so we have a tight family.
We have a lot of fun. Yeah, a little bit. Talk about your wife a little bit. Talk about where, yeah. How'd you meet her?
Yeah, she's great. She's a Midwestern girl. She's from Cincinnati, Ohio. I met her probably 14 or 15 years ago. She had a summer job working on a golf course, and I was out there playing golf, and we met on the golf course, and the rest is history. She was the beverage cart girl, the girl that drives the cart that sells the beer and the food. So I am one of the only men you might ever meet that actually successfully nabbed the BevCon girl. That was me.
Wow, you are a talented man.
Yeah.
Well, man, thank you so much for being on. That's very, very awesome. And
yeah, I appreciate you having me.
Yeah, I appreciate seeing you every time, at the games. And, obviously I'm extraordinarily motivated to have USF do really well. Everybody appreciates you and appreciate the job that you're doing. So we're just looking forward to just moving forward. Have a great
That's Thanksgiving. Right. That's for sure. Well, I appreciate your support and your, you having me on here to be able to spread the word about what we're doing, and appreciate your friendship and spending time with you and being part of this community with you.
Yeah, well, let's keep it going. Go Dons.
Go Dons.